Okay, welcome back. It's the Bite Me Fishing Show. Dean, you had a great story that'll get us into a topic that I think a lot of people are going to want to hear and definitely relate to.
Man, I won't get into like too many details about it. It was just kind of the sentiment that came with the story, that, you know, we were out there fishing and I don't remember how the conversation led up, but we were just talking about fishing here and fishing there. And the guy on the boat with me, he mentioned, you know, that it was going to, he said be his last fishing trip for a couple of months. And he was starting cancer treatment next week or in the next couple of weeks. So he was out doing him a little vacation, getting some time outdoors, but he does fish a lot. I mean, he fishes up and down the coast, a lot of fresh water, a lot of bass fishing, just fishing dude. And so, yeah, he was facing some pretty serious challenges coming up ahead in the next few months where he was going to be actually relocating to Houston for a while for the treatments that he was going to be doing. And it just, you know, it puts into perspective whenever you hear stories like that, or, you know, you sit down and visit with somebody personally who is about to go through that. And we've all had friends and family, you know, that you can relate that story to that have gone through that. And it just reminds you that every single day that you get is a blessing and should never be taken for granted, even though we kind of tend to. It's easy to take it for granted that it's just always going to be there for us. But it's one of those things that reminds you when you are fortunate enough to be out there. And kind of the point was, you know, it wasn't about the fish that we were catching. It wasn't about the numbers. It wasn't about the size. It was just about being there, the environment that made that day what it was.
Well, Scott, I want to get your stories, but I'm going to share a couple real quick because I'm talking about like being in the outdoors and people sometimes, my wife sometimes, Jan gives me a hard time sometimes. You know, if I'm fishing on a Sunday, I tell her, this is my church. It really is. I go to church, but when I'm out there, it's also my church. And I want to tell two quick stories here about the healing powers. It just makes you better. One of them is mine. One I just heard yesterday. So mine was, it's been probably, man, might be pushing 10 years now since my brother died. My older brother died. And when I got the news, I'd visit him that previous weekend. I got the news like on a Tuesday or Wednesday. And I told my wife, I just need to get away. So I hooked up the boat and I took off to Sabine. It's when I was still fishing in Sabine. So it had to be at least 10 years ago. And launched the boat and just was driving clear in my head. Didn't even care that much about fishing. And I don't even know what made me stop in a place I've never fished before in my life, ever. And it was way up on the northeast corner of Sabine. And I just stopped and I just started casting, just kind of, like I said, just clearing my head. My brother had just passed away. And I started catching fish. And then I kept catching fish. And then I kept catching fish. And I was like, damn, Manuel, you're doing it for me, aren't you? Because he was a big fisherman as well. My brother's name was Manuel. And ended up catching just, I don't even know, 30, you know, trout, various sizes. And then I went home and I just felt better. You know, I felt like he did that for me. And in the years after that, every once in a while when I was in that area, I would stop and I marked it on my GPS, Manuel spot, you know, because I had never fished there before, caught a bunch of fish. I never caught not one more fish in that spot. Not one, ever. Because I would always kind of stop there and fish. And I'm like, well, damn. You know, it just makes you fishing and outdoors. It could have been total coincidence. Maybe it was, you know, prescient. I don't know. But it just made me feel good. And I want to share this story real quick before I get to yours, Scott, because it's why we do this. It's certainly something that helps a lot of people. So this is from actually we're going to have him on the show here in the next week or so as well. Captain Kevin out of Venice, Louisiana was telling this story. He had a couple of clients that booked him. All right. One was 81 years old and one was 83 years old. And the 81 year old, he came to find out as he's taking him out tuna fishing. skipped his treatment, his cancer treatment that day, so he could fish. And they just whacked him. And this 81-year-old caught what he said was a tuna that was more than 100 pounds. And he said they never flinched. He never complained. He never got too hot. He was just out there. And it was chemo. I mean, he skipped his chemo treatment that day so he could go fishing. He went back. You know, obviously they got the fish and all that stuff. And a week later, he died. And a week later, that 81-year-old died. And his buddy stayed in touch and said that was all he needed. That was the grand goodbye, you know? Yeah. So, again, not to get too hokey here, but this stuff is real, Scott. I know you've got probably some similar stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it on here so many times when I was working in homicide and I needed a break. Yeah, I'd work a bad case, you know, a baby getting killed or another officer getting killed and whatever, and just disappear. Yeah, no cell phones back then. You know, nothing that would reach where I was going. And I would just go out there and I didn't like get a hotel room and go to Port O'Connor or Port Mansfield or anything. I literally went out on the boat and bought a tarp. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to see anybody, talk to anybody, nothing. And by the end of the two or three days of that, I'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's helped me a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And but the big one when I saw that on the rundown was with Heroes on the Water.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The things that we see with Heroes on the Water. Dean was there for this one. We had a ranch up at the north end of Lavaca Bay. One of our friends owned a ranch. Had a bunch of marsh around it. It's right at the mouth of the river.
Mm-hmm. And
we brought 10 or 12 vets out there for the weekend. And it was windy, nasty, front blowing in. We couldn't really do the kayaks the day. And but we had this one kid named Kyle. I'll never forget that kid's name. And he just had a blank stare. And he would spoke when spoken to, but it was mumbled and it was quiet.
Yeah.
But like in the group setting, everybody be in the house. It was a big, huge house. And we had people there cooking and, you know, we were making a big deal out of it. And you look over and Kyle would be sitting in a chair 3 or 4 feet from a wall and facing the wall away from everybody. And he would just sit and stare at the wall. And one of our good friends, Buzz Black, was there and he was in Vietnam and got talking to Buzz. I was like, man, I don't know how to get through to him. He says, well, he's trying not to think about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a coping mechanism. And we got Kyle out there and he caught a fish. we had a bridge over one of the bayous in the ranch, and we all went out there on that bridge. And, you know, couldn't really kayak that day, and he caught a fish off of that. And then the next day, we settled down. We got able to get him in the kayaks. And Jim Dolan, who was running the Heroes on the Water at the time, he called me the next Monday after that thing, and he said, "Yeah, I got a call from the therapist back at the military hospital." And he said, first thing they said was, "What did y'all do to Kyle?" Oh no.
nothing.
Didn't do anything. He expecting the worst. And they said, "He will not shut up."
Oh, wow.
We've never heard him talk more than a couple words here and there.
Yeah.
And he won't shut up. All he's talking about is that fishing trip. And the fish that caught. And it was about 2 or 3 months later, that was a good while back, everybody was doing veteran fishing trips and getting things together. And somebody sent me a clipping from the paper in, they were fishing the Sabine. I guess it was the Beaumont paper. Mm-hmm. Somebody sent me a clipping and had a group picture of all these veterans. And there's Kyle standing in the middle of it with a big grin on his face. That was the eye opener for me for Heroes on the Water.
Yeah,
I'll tell you another story about that night or that weekend. And so it was windy, and the front was blowing in, and the front blew in, and so there was these little like oil field roads that ran all through the marsh with little bridges and little places. That's where we were kayak fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat out there that night, and it got to be 30-something degrees, wind blowing 30 miles an hour. Somebody built a little fire down there by the bridge to just try to warm up. And so these guys, man, they're scattered around the bank. And it got late. I mean, I don't know whose idea it was to go night fishing, but somebody decided, let's go night fishing. And, I mean, nobody was ever going to say no to anything these guys wanted to do. It's like, man, let's go. And so we're out there, and it gets to be like 10 o'clock, and we're like, okay, this is all good. It's getting cold, but it would end soon. And so it gets to like midnight, man. We're still out there frozen, man. People are like snuggled up in corners. And these dudes are sitting up there on the bridge. They're still fishing. And I walked up to one of them. You know, I was kind of like suggesting it's about time to wrap it up. And
hey, what do you think?
And I don't remember I said, y'all about ready to go or something? And he looks at me, he goes, hell no, I can do this all night long. And I was like, oh. I was like, gonna be a long night, boys.
Early morning.
We're gonna need some more wood for the fire.
Yeah. It's real though, man. Let's put a bow on this discussion and get you set up start to finish on everything you need to know to fish the. And you're talking about taking those heroes out.
One of those guys was sitting on the edge of that bridge, and he was right on the rail looking like over these oysters and barnacles and all this stuff. And I said to one of them, I was like, man. I said, you might want to back up from that. I said, man, it's kind of dangerous. And dude looked at me and he was like, if you knew what I've been through, he says, falling off of this thing would be the least of my concerns. So it was just also a reminder of where those guys' minds were, you know, and how important that was or how impactful it was to get out there and spend a weekend doing that. And, you know, occasionally we did get follow-up stories from it that, you know, it is 100%. I mean, I think the heroes on the water, their motto actually is healing something.
From the background of the paddlefish heal.
Paddlefish heal. I knew it was in there. Yes.
The other thing, Scott, is sometimes when I've taken guys out on boats, I've done several of these, you don't see the injuries because it's PTSD or shell shock, whatever people used to call it. Like I would take some guys out that were, you know, with a bomb went off or something, and they have burns and it's very obvious, or prosthetics and it's very obvious. I'll never forget one guy that took his daughter out. The daughter was like 7-8 years old, and she was clinging to him, and he just looked normal, you know, as normal as you could say, you know, like anybody else. Anybody, I'll put it this way, anybody who saw us fishing would just think there's two guys fishing. And he had that 1,000-yard stare like you're talking about when you saw him up close. And as the day's ending and you know, we fished and caught some fish and all that, the daughter came up and hugged me and said, thank you. I've never seen him so happy. And I actually thought to myself, I didn't really see him smile, but he was talking a lot. So I guess it's kind of what you're talking about. He was talking more than he did even at home, you know, and you don't see all the injuries.
Yeah. And talking to Buzz, he said, you know, we replaced some bad memories with something good that he could think about.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, good time to mention, of course, here, Heroes on the Water and Texas Boys Outdoors are the beneficiaries. For the Bite Me feeding frenzy. But it's very, very real. We've all experienced it ourselves or on our boats or whatever. And I just thought it would be good to share some of those healing stories. Let's get to the next topic. And I kind of want to – well, Dean, I'll start with you. The weather is going to be windy and nasty, and so this may not be appropriate for this weekend. But it is. The calendar keeps telling me it's blue water time, man. It's blue water time. You know, what are you feeling in terms of getting out there? You said the blue water's been coming in, but it's just been so windy.
The calendar lies. The wind tells the truth. I mean, yes. And so before this little storm event we had, I guess it was about 10 days ago, we did have a little run. It was short. Three or four days where the wind just went flat and the blue water was coming up to the shoreline. It was pouring into the channels. And that took an abrupt 180 and hasn't ever looked back. But and if it would quit, I mean, if we would get over whatever's going on now, we will get eventually into the doldrums of summer, into the heat, and it will be there. Some years it happens a little sooner. Sometimes it takes a little longer. But if it does stop, it will only take, you know, 3 or 4 days for that to happen. But what made last year so amazing is that there was no tropical activity anywhere in the Gulf. Mm-hmm. It was just a very quiet year. And those currents, whatever drives that force out there, when that blue water came to the beach and to the jetties, it stayed there all summer long. I mean, it just, nothing disrupted those currents, no wind, and the fish just kept coming with them. I mean, last year was one of the most epic summers I've ever had for kingfish. But it's going to be at least 2 weeks now. I don't know. I was looking at the forecast, and I mean, we got wind for like the next 10 days. Mm-hmm. It drops down to 10 or 12 somewhere in the middle, but we got some that are 25 over the next week or so.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to wait till you get here this weekend. It's probably going to ramp it up to 35-ish.
Hey, I'm taking some time off too. I'll be down there in a while. But Scott, let's set people up eventually. People like myself that do it pretty much just in the summertime. A lot of people do. But, you know, if you're going to run near shore and maybe some, you know, offshore a little bit, a lot of people just don't know. I mean, they don't know what to run, leaders, lines, baits, live bait, what to put on their boat. I mean, we got time, man. Let's do a little tutorial here for those folks.
You can do a lot of different things with bait. You got the cigar minnows. We used to call them cigar minnows. They call them sardines now.
Yeah.
I don't know when that changed. But soaking cigar minnows, that works. You can do
maybe that rigging. Was offensive to cigars.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe somebody tried to smoke one. But you can do that on the bottom. You can jig on the bottom. There's all the different jigging has become a big deal. Mm-hmm. You got slow pitch jigging. You got diamond jigs. You got all different kinds. Regular feather jigs, you know, they're hair jigs. You can drop those down and catch your bottom fish. Drift lining, well, we always did drift line a cigar minnow on an unweighted rig, you know, tied off to a, you know, when we're tying off to a we used to tie off to a whole lot of rigs. Yeah. Not a whole lot of them left anymore. So now it's more about, you know, sitting on spot lock. And while you're fishing for the snapper, drift out a couple of lines, do a couple flat lines out there. Ribbon fish is excellent for that. Then you can also troll, you know, mm-hmm. deep diving trollers. There's a whole bunch of different ones. Nomad makes a bunch of different
mm-hmm.
Trolling baits. One of the things I like about theirs is they are designed for high speed.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go, some of the old trolling baits that we had with the lips, you had to go so dadgum slow
mm-hmm.
and you didn't cover as much water. And if you went any faster, they'd start running sideways, running crooked. And these new ones with Nomad, they're run true and straight
mm-hmm.
at pretty solid speeds.
Yeah. And,
so I'm looking forward to that. I'm getting a bunch of those here real soon.
I'm looking forward to their poppers. I want to see a kingfish come up on their poppers that they have. Yep.
Poppers too. Yeah. And one of the things I used to love to do is get around a shrimp boat. You know, if you find the shrimp boats out there and they're culling in the morning, a lot of them these days seem to cull while they're running.
Mm-hmm.
They used to, they'd shrimp all night and they'd cull in the mornings and they'd usually gather up. There'd be two or three or four of them. And if you could find something like that, man, we'd park in it. And mm-hmm. with those topwaters.
Yeah.
And once we catch one or two kings, we kind of troll through the boats, catch a couple of kings like that. Get the itch, you know, get mm-hmm. that itch out of the way. And then we'd just kind of drift through them and throw topwaters back behind those boats and just watch those. your hookup ratio was pretty low, but it was a hell of a lot of fun because those kings, and they'll go 10, 15, 20 feet out in the air.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's just
incredible how they shoot out. Mm-hmm. We got all the weed that we talked about last week. You got, you know, if you find a weed line like that, troll down the side of it, troll the clean side once, troll the dirty side once. Just follow along the edge of it.
Or even plastics.
Yeah. Throwing, mm-hmm. You get on your trolling motor, throw soft plastics and try to pick out holes in the weed line, mm-hmm. and drop your plastics in there. A DOA shrimp. I've done that many times, and that'll pick off a cobia.
Use the shrimp in there?
Oh yeah. Cobia, triple tail. If you're far enough out, the mahi will be up underneath there. Mm-hmm. They can't pass up a little DOA shrimp just drifting along in that grass.
Well, that's an idea.
It can get, there's so many things you can do on the beachfront. That's a big reason why I bought the boat that I've got.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those periods and those times. And we have I was looking forward into the forecast in the middle of next week. I've got some single digit days.
Now that's what I like to hear. So Dean and I love fishing a couple miles off the jetties in the summertime. We are back and we're trying to set up some folks here the right way. You and I like to do the trolling. Like I said, I'm looking forward to that Nomad Popper. I want to really try that this year. But looking at depths, if you're going, let's say, you know, off near shore, Dean, depths, I usually start no lighter than 30 feet. And, you know, then you can go from there. But and lines and leaders, what are you using?
Well, I'm using a pin battle rod and reel, like a 6,000 spinner, 30 or 40 pound braid, and then a wire leader. And what I do with, I mean, and I kind of came up with this myself. I don't know if it's a real technique or it's this. I don't use swivels. I do not use hardware connecting the braid to the wire. I put a loop in the braid and I put a loop in the wire. And then I feed it through the hole and use a loop-to-loop connection on that because I was getting cut off by too many Spanish mackerel, too many other things that would hit the swivel. The swivel can create a little bubble trail, and it attracts attention. So it's braid, loop-to-loop to wire. And the wire, it's like 60-pound wire. It's not real heavy wire. You can mm-hmm. still make your little haywire twist with your hands. It doesn't really take a tool to do it.
Some of us use tools.
And then I twist it around there and then carry cutters with me and just cut it off flush. And then put on the lure itself, I run the wire through the eye of the lure and do a haywire twist on that. So there is no swivels. There's no extra tackle at it. I try to keep it as clean as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing you'll see, too, people use way too much wire. Yeah, you'll see somebody with a 4 or 5 foot wire leader on there, and it's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just enough to keep them from biting your main line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm usually about 18, 24 inches. And you start getting into the super long wire, it just gets to be a pain in the butt. And, you know, and the wire is going to kink. When you catch 2 or 3 fish, you're going to get kinked up.
Bend and stay bent, and then your lure's not working.
Well, I mean by kinked. It kinks up when you're fighting a fish, and then you end up, yeah, you're changing leaders.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that wire ain't cheap.
Yeah. You know, so. And try to bend that wire back into shape.
No, never. Like, never.
And wet and slippery, and you're like in a hurry because you're trying to bend it because you want to get it back in the water. You don't want to take the time to rig up another one.
Yeah.
And the whole situation can get a little chaotic.
It's like you're watching me fish on some of these comments. I bend it, and then you bend it back, then you bend it back.
They actually sell one. I've seen it. It's like little rollers, mm-hmm. and you can straighten the wire.
Oh, really?
This little roller. I don't have one, mm-hmm. but I've kicked around getting one. But like I said, I'll have stuff rigged up and ready, so I've got multiples. And when one gets bent, I just switch it out.
Yeah, that's what I do.
I used to use the flexible multi-strand wire.
Mm-hmm.
Use that a lot, but it's even more expensive. And then just use crimps to make my connections. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a pain out on the boat. It's easier to do the haywire twist with that straight wire.
So yeah. And be ready for tarpon. Have at least a couple of rods ready. How do you rig those? Since we're, you know, let's say I'm running the jetties, and I take that. I guess it would be north, on the north jetty, and that's where you usually can see some tarpon outside of Aransas Pass jetties. And you go down that shoreline, and I'm trolling. Then you see some tarpon, you know, somewhere. What do you what do you have rigged there?
60 or 80 pound fluorocarbon or mono, and you got to have, you know, they don't have teeth, but they're rough. I mean, you know, like 60 grit sandpaper in their lips, and they'll wear through anything lighter than that pretty quick. I have DOAs rigged up.
The bait ready. Buster?
Yeah, the bait buster, variety of colors. Used to just use pretty much natural colors, but after my young man pulled the purple out on me and caught one on his next cast, I've kind of switched over and gone to some of that. Have those, and the leader does need to be long on that. And that's why those tarpon rods that I had,
The Scott Knowles.
The Scott Knowles tarpon rods, they all have bigger eyes because you've got that big old knot.
Mm-hmm. And
you got to cast that knot. And I want a leader longer than the fish that I'm pursuing on tarpon. Yeah. You get into one of those big fish and you get an extended long fight on a, you know, 100 plus, 110, 120 on up to, you know, 150s and above. Wherever the tail is, it's hitting on that braid, and you'll see a big, big area on the braid where it just gets frayed up.
Yeah.
We've lost a couple really, really big tarpon that way.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people plug in them, they use like 100 pound leader, and they use crimps and 100 pound leader, 120 pound. I mean, they go all in. They've lost big fish. Yeah. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is they've lost big fish and they don't want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
But on those rods, one of the things that I insisted on when we were doing those was bigger eyes, so that those knots, you know, you knot up even if you do a slim knot, and you know, you've got something you work on and you make it slim, it's still like an Albright. It's still going to clank going through those guides with that 80 pound doubled over.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, you know, the bait buster, that's a go-to. And we mentioned Nomad. They have that one with the hook that releases.
I have some of those coming.
That's going to be badass.
That's perfect. It's six and eight inch, and it's a big old paddle tail.
Yeah.
And for those of you that hadn't seen it, the hook is on a swivel.
Yeah.
It'll pop out, and that way, with a regular straight jig, they can tarpon jump so much and they're so crazy that the weight of the jig head on a straight regular hook will torque against the hook set, and they can throw it out pretty easy.
Yeah.
So this is a kind of ingenious little idea here, putting the hook on the swivel behind the jig head. So I'm curious to see how it works. A lot of the reports I'm reading about it, and a lot of the guys who got some of the first ones prototyping, they were catching tarpon on them.
Yeah.
So that could be good.
It's Jonathan, the Maniacs.
Maniacs.
I was sitting here looking at the website as you were speaking, and maybe my iPad was listening to you. It popped up.
They're advertising pretty hard. They're just now coming out. Like I said, I've got some on order, and I want to try them out. Park Off says, you know, it's like a store-bought coon pop, sort of. Idea on a coon pop is to completely lose the jig head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the jig head is not a part.
No.
It's not on the hook. Mm-hmm. You know, the hook is tied to your line. Everybody's heard about coon pops. I did a video with you about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lead jig head that has a straight piece on the back that your soft plastic goes onto. Then you zip tie as like a 10-aught sized hook.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Mustad Demons in 10-aught, and you use the smallest little bitty zip tie you can, or some of that copper bait wire, rigging wire, and you wrap that through the eye and across mm-hmm. the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And then when a fish eats it, they jump, they start shaking their head. And when they shake their head, the whole point of it is that the lead just goes flying.
Yeah.
And, you know, it breaks off. Now you're just connected with nothing but your leader to a circle hook, and your odds go way up on landing that fish.
Okay, coming up, let's talk about some fishing oddities we've seen out there. Plus, what would Scott do and what would Dean do? You'll want to hear that for the weekend. Of course, brought to us every week by Master Hitch. What would Scott do and what would Dean do? Brought to us by Master Hitch. Scott Pinkley and the guys, so, so good. Can't emphasize that enough. Any trailer issues, repairs, manufacturing, repair, wiring, any trailer, any type of trailer, it's the place to go. He's even talking about donating a complete trailer overhaul to the Feeding Frenzy. That's about $1,200 value right there. So on the Bite Me group page, there was a post. The Rojo Cinco, as they called it. And I forget exactly how many times. I think 4 or 5 times over the course of several years. One of our listeners posted this picture of a redfish that had 5 spots on each side. And he caught that same damn fish 4 or 5 times in different years. So it got me thinking about some fishing oddities. 5 times, a texter said. Same fish 5 times. What are some of those oddities that you can remember? For me, and I've told this story for those who haven't heard it, though, I was fishing with BG, my middle son, and he hooked up, either he did or I did, I forget who hooked it up first, a redfish, and he started fighting it. And then that same redfish bit my hook, and we were both hooked to the same fish. This redfish was hooked and fighting and bit my hook, as my bait as well. Same redfish, 2 baits, and I let him claim it, even though I think I might have caught it first. But some of these oddities that you've seen out on the water.
When you're in like a school of reds and you got them real aggressive, I mean, one of the coolest things that you'll ever see is when you're fighting a fish and it's, you know, splashing and running around, and then the others are chasing it and trying to eat what is in their mouth, and you hook 2 reds at one time, which... Mm. 2 reds do get hooked, but you're never going to land those 2 because they're too strong. One of them is going to pull off of the hook.
Yeah.
But I've also caught, you know, been fighting a redfish or a speckled trout, a small trout, and hook a red while fighting that trout and land the trout and the red at the same time. And then we've landed on numerous occasions 2 trout on 1 lure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got one that's fighting and the other one doesn't realize the impending doom, the peril that the other one is in, and they try to eat what's in their mouth, and then you hook up 2 at a time, which is always fun to watch.
And I've got several pictures where I've landed 2 reds on top water mm-hmm. at the same time. It's really weird when the second one hits and takes it away, you know, tries to take it away from him, and he gets hooked. The fight kind of quits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fighting against each other on that hook. And like Dean said, a lot of times they'll pull off. But I've had it happen numerous times with, you know, where one pulled off. But probably 2, 3, 4 times over the years, I've caught 2 at the same time. One time I was with my dad when I did it. And I just reached down and grabbed it was a old Rebel jumping minnow.
Mm-hmm.
I reached down and grabbed the jumping minnow and just picked it up and had a, you know, 6, 7 pound red on each hook.
Actually, the person who posted that is listening right now, C. Young, and he said his son, his son's girlfriend, his daughter, and he have all caught the same 5-on-5 redfish. That's unbelievable.
That is an oddity for sure. It's a
dumbass fish is what that is. speaking of which, I heard another story this week. I don't know if it counts as a fishing oddity or not, but about a 12-year-old kid caught his first ever, he wanted to catch a tuna, speaking of tuna earlier, and he caught a tuna, and you know how they bleed, you know, when you land them and there's a lot of blood on those tuna. All he had on was gym shorts or beach shorts, whatever, board shorts, and nothing else, just barefoot, no shirt or whatever. So he was so excited that he caught that tuna that he started putting his hands in the blood and covered his whole face and his whole body and his arms and his legs with all the tuna blood. I'm like, I got to see a picture of that. I asked for a picture. I'll post it.
Went Aborigine on that thing.
He did. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what all this heat does.
And it's really kind of weird because sometimes, like in January, I miss summer. It's like, man.
And then you just can't be happy. You just can't. I'll tell you what. Go ahead.
At this time of year, you really do miss those months, man.
But you know what makes you it all better is when you do get the laid down winds and you're in that deep blue water, gets a little cooler. You got that K top, which Scott doesn't like, but I love. And it's nice out there when you're trolling.
Well, and that's true. I mean, you're not going to be trolling the blue water in January.
Yeah, exactly. All right. What would Scott do? What would Dean do? I am so optimistic. Don't rain on my parade. I know it's going to be a little windy, but it's a south southeast wind. Scott, am I just crazy, or what's it looking like this weekend?
I'll bring you shootouts.
Well, yeah, you can do that. Yeah,
you're gonna need multiples.
Mm-hmm. It's a three bag drag.
I mean, those things are really good. I don't, you know, but they ain't magic.
Yeah. I was dragging three bags earlier this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sunny. I mean, we got that going for us.
Mm-hmm. The tide has dropped down a little bit.
It has been low. I've been looking at it. Yeah.
A little lower. I mean, I drove in from Port Lavaca a while ago and, you know, driving over all those bridges there, Powderhorn and such, and water looked like it was at normal levels. I was expecting it to be a little high with all this southeast wind.
Yeah.
By Saturday, Sunday, I would expect it to be high again with that southeast wind blowing 20 gusting to 30.
Yeah.
Chances are good it's going to go up.
And then we're coming back to the full moon here. I think the full moon is ahead of us here in about a week.
Yeah. Well, actually, just a couple of days, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it'll bring a little water with it. But we've had so much high tide for so long. The fish on my flats have been spread thin, or whether they're in the bushes, the redfish have been scarce. I mean, and when you do catch them, when you find them, there's one here, one there. There, we haven't found any really one spot where you're consistently getting them, you know, moving around a lot. But I just was kind of excited when I looked at the tide and planned my week that the tide has dropped down about a foot less water than what we've been fishing in for the last 2 weeks. So just something to mix it up. But then, you know, the speckled trout have been very consistent on the deeper edges and the drop-offs. And then you get 25 mile an hour wind. Those are very difficult to hold position.
Yeah.
To this. So a lot of that goes away when the wind blows 20. So, I mean, overall, there's a lot of challenges this week.
Go ahead, Scott.
I'm going to be poling on Thursday and Friday and Saturday, and I'm going to be poling downwind.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that. I've got my routes kind of picked out. I've got four or five different routes that I can work. Tide's going to be up. Last Friday, Dean says, you know, he couldn't find his fish. I could hear them, and they were feeding way back in the trees.
Yeah,
and they were so far back there, you couldn't reach them. And so there was fish up in there. Hopefully, when that tide came down a little bit, they pulled out some, but. I got a funny feeling.
And it's crazy. That is always consistent when we have this conversation, because you're always pushing that boat back in those creeks and those marshes. And whenever I'm complaining over here about the fish being spread thin of the tide, you always have them crashing in the bushes where you're at. Seems to be a recurring theme.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reds want to go as shallow as they can get. It's easier for them to feed. They feed better in shallower water than they do deeper water. And that, yeah, it takes away a direction that a bait fish or a shrimp can get away from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can't go up and they can't go down because they got to go side to side or straight away.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice.
It makes it easier for them. So they're going to go as shallow as they can get. And unfortunately, right now, a whole lot of this, the shallow as they can get is in
the trees. Yeah. You guys got some dates open anytime? For I always forget. I want to make sure and remind myself to do that.
A lot of sporadic days.
Yeah, I'm starting to book some tarpon trips. So if that's on your mind, I've got 4 or 5 calls I need to make right now to get baits set up. But as soon as this wind drops, I'm going to be out there every day that I can getting on the beachfront and chasing these big silverfish.
Me too. Me too. I'm confident. I'll be out there.
I like your attitude.
One time this year, I could talk you away from going to see your buddy Dean all the time.
Well, I got to come see you anyway. I got to take you a hitch from old Scott and Master Hitch. Maybe, you know what? I'm off a week. Maybe I'll go down there a couple of days, at least one. See if all the hype is real. All right, boys. That was great, man. Real good advice. Real good topics, as always. So don't forget to book the fellas. And we're bearing down. Next week we'll be talking about 4th of July weekend, but it's on a Saturday, so maybe you can get the whole week off like I did and fish without the crowds the following week. You guys have a great rest of the week, weekend. Catch them up. We'll talk to you next time.